Hi, this is Nicole Hensoth, editor of HPC Wire, here with today's edition of Soundbite, our daily interview series featuring researchers, thought leaders, and newsmakers in the world of high-performance computing. Last week, we carried an article that was quite popular about the necessity and viability of turning on ECC for GPU devices in large clusters, pointing to research that demonstrated the performance overhead may not always be worth the ECC price for some applications. Here to offer some insight into this research is Dr. Ross Walker, an associate research professor at the San Diego Supercomputer Center. He's joined by Robin Betts, an undergraduate researcher who is also involved in the investigation. Hi, Ross. Hi, Robin. Thanks for joining today.
Hi, no problem.
So for those who haven't read the article yet, can you summarize your findings in general?
So yes. So to summarize the work, we've been interested in using graphics cards for computation in science for a long time now. Now, everyone's been used to the idea of having error-correcting memory and error-correcting within CPU caches on traditional CPU machines. And most servers come with that as standard now. Obviously, there's an extra cost that goes with that. With graphics cards, however, the situation originally was very different. The first graphics cards that people used were designed for playing computer games, and it was a while before people started bringing out graphics cards designed specifically for computation, one example being NVIDIA's Tesla series. And those graphics cards, when they first came out, they didn't have the ability to do error checking, and that scared a lot of people. And it wasn't until essentially the second or third generation that error checking was actually added to these GPUs, and that's when they started to become adopted for large-scale supercomputers, for example. And ECC was always listed as a requirement in order to be able to do scientific computing. However, in our software, we've never really found it necessary to have ECC, and we wanted to test that properly. And the main reason being, we wanted, for example, to evaluate whether one could actually use the GeForce gaming cards, which are substantially cheaper than the Tesla cards, if you had them in a desktop in your lab, for example, was it viable to run scientific calculations on them? And a lot of people give you a doomsayer approach where they're like, it doesn't have error correcting, you're going to get completely the wrong answers, this is a big problem, you should never do it, you can't trust your scientific results. If there's a bit flip, you could end up making completely incorrect scientific conclusions. And we decided really we wanted to put that to the test. And one of the nice things, we've been working for a while on improving the precision model, that is the way that numbers are actually summed in our software. This is a program called the AMBER molecular dynamics software. We use it for drug discovery, for example, and looking at how enzymes undergo large-scale motions when they react with things. And part of that work was actually to replace a lot of the floating-point arithmetic we had in the software with fixed-point arithmetic. So that is, we essentially use scaled integers to represent floating-point numbers. And the real beauty of that is it then becomes completely deterministic. If we run, even though we're running a massively parallel number of threads, even because integer arithmetic is deterministic, so the code becomes deterministic. So if we run the code from the same starting conditions with the same random seed, and we run that 100 times, we will get 100 bitwise identical results. And this is one of the only major MD codes out there. There's a few others now that can do it, but this is one of the only major ones that at the time could do this deterministic execution. And the main reason for doing that was really for one of debugging, right? To debug math, like when you've got millions of threads in process at any one time, debugging that becomes very hard. So we did it for that, such that you could immediately identify race conditions, for example. But one of the side effects of that we realized was it gave us this great way to test hardware. We could run the exact same calculation. It's a real-world calculation that thousands of scientists around the world are using. We could run that multiple times on the same hardware, and we would be able to detect, firstly, if there was any hardware problems, was the hardware giving the correct answer? But then from that, we realized that we could actually test the effect of ECC. That is, we could run with and without ECC. We could run the same calculation again and again and again. And at the end, we'd end up with 10 times 5 terabyte trajectories that all should be bitwise identical. And if they weren't, the question would then become, well, something must have gone wrong in this calculation. So that would give us the ability to characterize the types of way those calculations would diverge and also see the frequency of that divergence, right? Versus does the calculation just crash, right? And our real concern was one of ECC, or our underlying hypothesis was this idea of ECC, if you have an error that's not detected, you know, does it just lead a calculation to crash? If it crashes a calculation for what we do, scientific research, you know, we're not flying planes here, for example, it really doesn't matter. You can restart the calculation and run it again from scratch. The thing that scares people is, you know, it gives an error that is then silent and leads to a completely incorrect answer, and you don't know what that is. And you don't necessarily know that that happened, short of running the calculation twice or having some kind of error correcting. So what we did was set up a series of tests to see if we could actually quantify how often these errors occur and the types of effect they have on the calculations. And that's what we tried to summarize in our paper.
Mm-hmm. Your system choices for running these tests, I think, are kind of important. Maybe one of you can describe which systems you ran on. One of them was just using a regular gaming type graphics card from NVIDIA, which I thought was interesting. And you ran this across multiple size clusters also.
Yeah, I mean, I'll get an answer of the machines we chose. Our initial idea was to use the Keeneland system, which is run by Georgia Tech, as part of the National Science Foundation's XSEED systems, and that's a large-scale GPU cluster. There's not a huge number of machines available with lots of GPUs in, where people were willing to let us turn ECC on or off. And that was one of the biggest problems we found, actually, is locating enough resources that where we could run the calculations. Our idea was you know, essentially to have half the machine with ECC on and half the machine with ECC off, run the same calculation again and again and again, and then repeat it with the other half of the machine switched. That would allow us to pull out hardware errors versus actual random ECC type errors occurring. And our idea was to run that for long enough that we would actually get enough statistics. And it turns out that there's a lot of politics involved in whether you can, how easy it is to access these machines, and actually getting people to allow you to turn ECC off on these cards, even though it's pretty simple to do. So we ran an initial run on the Keeneland system, but we couldn't really get enough time on there to see enough statistics. So then we talked to some people at Los Alamos National Los Alamos National Laboratory. That was an interesting system because we were told that ECC errors may occur more often at high altitude or anywhere where there might be, you know, large amounts of radiation, etc. So Los Alamos becomes an interesting place because it's at 7,000 feet. So we talked to a researcher there, Nathan, who is also an author on the paper, and he arranged for us to have access to their systems. And again, we ran into issues of people not actually wanting to turn ECC off for us in order to do these tests, which was a difficult one, but we managed to get some nodes without ECC. And then we ran there in order just essentially to get more statistics. We also have systems at SDSC whereby we use gaming cards instead of the Tesla series cards. And part of that was the gaming cards obviously don't support ECC, but there's also the argument of maybe they're less reliable than the professional series cards that NVIDIA offers. So we wanted to get an idea of, you know, what was the reliability of the gaming cards, and again, did ECC matter, and did these cards, you know, go bad over time, or were some of them bad to start with? So that was, we really chose three machines that were a combination of different locations, the Keeneland machine being at Oak Ridge National Lab at not a very high altitude, the Los Alamos National Lab machine being at a much higher altitude, and then the machine at SDSC being gaming cards. I mean, in an ideal world, what we'd like to have is 10,000 GPUs for a week in a given location where we could run them, you know, 5,000 with ECC on, 5,000 with ECC off, and then flip them. And that would have given us plenty more statistics in order to make quantitative arguments. But really, we had to take whatever machines we could find. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, we found that ECC errors are actually so rare that we weren't able to see any real ECC errors in the calculations.
Right. And that's what was so striking, I think, and interesting about your research that you recently published. So it turned out, if I could briefly summarize for you, and you can counter or answer to this, the real problem when it came to reliability was certainly not a matter of bit flip errors, but rather hardware issues, you know, problems with the motherboard, problems with the GPU, things that are far beyond detection sometimes, and also hard to attribute, obviously, to ECC. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, so part of the issue is one of with the way ECC is implemented with NVIDIA is if you turn ECC on, you actually lose 1/9 of the available memory, and you also effectively lose about 1/9 of the performance because what they do is they actually use some of the compute nodes to do the error checking. This is different to how it's done in CPU memory, for example, where there's actually extra hardware there that does it. Either way, that has a cost. So there's either a cost of purchasing the extra chips in order to do the ECC, or there's a cost in terms of performance. So you could really consider the CPU approach as a way that doesn't allow the user to turn off ECC if they want it. It's always on in hardware. But what we were looking at, you see, was this, our underlying hypothesis was if you consider a single node running a calculation might take X amount of time before there's some kind of failure, be it a disk failure, be it the node dies, be it any kind of error, power cut, etc. The running with ECC off gets you essentially 10% more performance on the GPUs, or if you just consider from a cost basis, you could buy 10% more hardware and then you'd be able to run 10% quicker. So the question comes down to, if for a moment you just assume that any ECC error that might occur is fatal, as in just destroys the calculation, such that you wouldn't make an incorrect scientific conclusion, then it becomes if for every 10 runs you do, if you see less than one ECC error for every 10 simulations, it actually becomes more cost-effective to run with ECC turned off. And the real idea there being, if you were to rewrite the way you describe that as errors per unit of simulation, what you could actually say there is because my calculations finish quicker with ECC off, there's actually less scope for any kind of error to occur. And therefore, one could almost say that the error rate in terms of errors per unit of simulation for ECC off is actually lower than when you've got ECC on. Now, that's quite a hypothesis that obviously a lot of people don't necessarily like, but it's what we were setting out to test. Now, certainly we didn't answer that conclusively in the paper because we couldn't get enough statistics on this. But I think it's a very interesting thing that people don't seem to consider, and that is, you know, in these days where we've got choices of spending the money on better disk or spending the money on more hardware or spending the money on more reliable hardware, if ECC gives you that, what is the optimum way for people to do that? And it's not necessarily a clear argument, and I don't think it's been discussed well enough in the literature. So.
Mm-hmm. And you even had a difficult time trying to talk centers into turning ECC off, even for this experiment meant to test this. What kind of reception or broader impact do you think this is going to have, if any? And maybe, Robin, you want to take the answer to that one?
Okay. So the broader impact of our research is that it really looks at the sources of error that are involved in these calculations, because there's been a lot of concern that ECC can cause real damage to these simulations by giving very slightly different results that are incorrect, but that people could still accept as publishable results. However, our work found that this isn't really a concern, but other sources of error really are. We did find this high rate of hardware error in the cheaper gaming cards without ECC, and we also found sources of error, such as IO-related error, that resulted in some jobs not completing, even with ECC turned on. So really the impact of this is that ECC errors should not be the primary concern of this kind of analysis.
If I could caveat that a little more. So one of the things I think people don't necessarily think about is a lot of these calculations, at least in terms of what we do, are very essentially stochastic calculations. That is, they're often run with some form of thermostat or barostat that relies on a random input. So we're really looking at, ultimately, if you want to calculate the free energy of a drug binding to a protein, for example, it's really an average over a long time scale simulation and then a large number of those simulations. So if you were to get errors, small errors in the force array, for example, that controls the rate at which these atoms move, if that's in a low order bit, that's really no different to just having the thermostat, and ultimately would get washed out in the noise. So the chances of you making an incorrect scientific conclusion there are very slim, especially when you consider that no one should ever make a conclusion based on a single experiment. So the question then becomes, you know, do small errors coming from ECC in low order bits, if they occur in the data, might not be a big deal. And errors in larger order bits just lead to the calculation crashing almost immediately. So assuming that these ECC errors don't occur very often, you might see them, you know, once a day on a large cluster, for example, then it really doesn't become too much of an issue to running these types of calculations. Now, that's obviously not true for everything, right? If this was an autopilot in an airplane, for example, you probably wouldn't want that to occur at all. And there's obviously some types of scientific calculations that would be much more sensitive than others. But given the sensitivity is a broad spectrum over different types of calculations, it seems reasonable that one should have control as to whether you have the ECC enabled or you can turn it off to obtain better performance or reduce costs. So.
Right. And so just as a very quick follow-up here, what comes next for this research? Are you going to try to run this on more systems? Are you going to tweak this at all and follow up in other ways?
We'd like to get enough results to actually get enough converged data that we could make some solid conclusions. Right now, a lot of what we've got is I wouldn't say speculative, but it's certainly based on not having enough data. And I think that's a lot of the problem here. These events are very rare. So it's hard to see. Now, I'd very much like to follow this up with, you know, access to a machine where we can test this, you know, over a period of 2 weeks, for example. Maybe pick a time when we have high sunspot activity or something where one could say that, you know, the traditional thing would be, you know, this is going to be very bad. You're going to have a lot of errors occurring. So the question is whether we can convince someone to let us do that and provide us the available time. Obviously, we have clusters here that we can run it on, but they're just not large enough to sample. I mean, these are ultimately being used as particle collectors is the way to think about this for ECC. So either that or the other approach we were discussing with our colleague at Los Alamos National Laboratory is maybe simulating something that generates more errors in ECC-type errors, for example, putting it in front of a neutron source, for example, while you're running the calculation. The only thing that concerns me there is I don't know how realistic that is versus the normal way in which one would run, you know, the normal types of radiation that these machines would be exposed to. So.
Exactly. Well, we'll definitely be keeping an eye on this. Dr. Ross Walker and Robin Betts, thanks so much for taking time today.
Thank you.
And to all of you, thanks for listening, and we'll be back again tomorrow.